Well, this morning, we're in chapter 9 of Luke. We know all about her stuff now, don't we? Luke chapter 9, verses 28 through 36. We're going to be looking at comparing the parallel passages of this passage in Matthew and Mark as well, but reading it from the book of Luke. Luke chapter 9, verse 28. The text says, "Now it came to pass about 8 days after these sayings that he took Peter, John, and James and went up on the mountain to pray. As he prayed, the appearance of his face was altered, and his robe became white and glistening. Behold, two men talked with him, who were Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spoke of his decease, or his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. But Peter and those with him were heavy with sleep, and when they were fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Then it happened as they were parting from him that Peter said to Jesus, 'Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah,' not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were fearful as they entered the cloud. And a voice came out of the cloud saying, 'This is my beloved Son, hear him.' When the voice had ceased, Jesus was found alone. But they kept quiet and told no one in those days any of the things they had seen." Of all the events that Jesus' disciples shared with Jesus, this to me seems the most, I don't mean to use the word bizarre, but the most unusual, the most fantastic, the most out of the ordinary. You know, we can imagine Jesus healing someone. We can imagine him giving sight to the blind and making the lame walk. We can imagine him even raising the dead. But I would have never in my own mind, I don't think, contemplate something like this that Jesus might do. Because it's so foreign to me. Of course, now growing up in the church, It's familiar to me because it's in the scriptures and I've read it and seen it, etc. But we're going to look through the passage, kind of compare. You see the chart I've got on your outline. Hope you, if you don't have one, look around. You may could find one. But compare, the, go back through this, kind of compare what's found in each of these Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and compare them. Start with is the very first phrase he says in our text, about 8 days after these sayings. Well, you look in Mark and Matthew, and it says after 6 days. And so, oh my, there we are. We knew that the Bible was contradict itself and all this type of stuff. And so here's one of those things. And I don't have the total answer to that. I can tell you there's, the way it's worded is a little different. In Luke, it says about 8 days, which is kind of a weak argument. After these sayings, in Mark and Luke, it just says after 6 days. And you can go back and look at what happened previous to this in all three of them, and it's the same event, or it's the same words that Jesus was speaking. But my answer to that is there's not enough information there to us to know where the starting point was in Mark's eyes and Matthew's eyes and where the starting point was specifically in Luke's eyes. But if we knew a little more information, we would see that there's no issue there with that. But after 8 days, he takes Peter, John, and James up on a mountain. Peter, John, and James. Out of the 12 disciples that Jesus had, Peter, James, and John share apart from the other nine, events with Jesus occasionally. And we see that they are together with him there. The appearance of his face, it says, was altered. His robe became white and glistening. His face was altered. The appearance of his face was altered. And his robe was white and glistening. Mark said he was transfigured before them. His clothes became shining, exceedingly white, like snow, such as no launderer on earth can whiten them. Matthew says he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as the light. I would suggest that in each of these things, the words fail to describe what they actually saw. When I think of white as snow, I think of white as snow. The words probably could not come to exactly define and describe how this was. The next thing we see is that two men talked with him, Moses and Elijah. Mark and Matthew both say the same thing in that regard. Moses and Elijah are two people that the Jewish people were fascinated, in a sense, with. And why is that? Well, Moses, because, at least partly because, he was, of course, their great leader from the past, but because no one knew where Moses was buried. God buried Moses, and the people of Israel had that question mark in their mind of what happened to him. What happened to Moses? Hundreds of years later, Elijah comes on the scene, and we know the account in the history of Israel that Elijah was carried to heaven in a whirlwind of fire, a chariot of fire. So that's kind of leaves you never forgetting that fact in our heritage, in our history. And so they're wondering. And you can see throughout the New or occasionally in the New Testament and at the end of the book of Malachi in the Old Testament, that there is some references to these two guys, especially Elijah. In fact, in our Matthew and Mark, I believe, and as this text goes on, they question that. They say, why is it said that Elijah must come first? So there's always this thought in their minds about the future, their future with the Messiah, and maybe there's a role there that Elijah and perhaps Moses plays that would kind of give them closure with those guys. And here they are, Peter, James, and John see both of those guys talking with Jesus. Then in Luke, it says, they appeared in glory. And that's an interesting word, a key word for our text this morning. They appeared in glory and talked of his departure, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Now, that information is not given in Matthew and Mark. And I don't know the significance of that. It doesn't tell us anything else about it, except that they're there talking with Jesus about the days ahead and what he would face in the coming days. The next events, Peter, James, and John, I'm doing a little shorthand there, you can see. Peter, James, and John go to sleep. Now, that's not the first, or it's not the last time they will do that in the special trips with Jesus. But they go to sleep. And upon awakening, when they awaken, they see this event. It reads to me like they're right in the middle of it. They wake up and boom, there's this bright light. And they recognize Jesus. They recognize Moses and Elijah. And there they are. Now, a question that came to my mind that I don't have the answer for is, how do they know that's Moses and Elijah? Did they go up and introduce themselves? I doubt it. Did Jesus tell them that's who it was? Doesn't read like that. It doesn't leave you any indication that it is. But somehow, And this is another key point here. Somehow in this transfiguration and in this display of glory, this glimpse of glory that God shows us, they are able to know who it is they're looking at. I don't think they even had to have their eyes open. They knew who it was. Somehow, this glorious display, these disciples know who they're looking at. And they see it. They wake up, and there it is. And somewhere along the way, Peter has an idea. And there is a saying that fits a lot of us occasionally, where we are surprised by events and we are caught off guard, you might say, by events or by things going on, and we're speechless. You hear that word, speechless. He was speechless. And there's a little saying that goes like this, and Joe or whoever, having nothing to say, said something. And that's the way a lot of us are. When we don't have a clue what to say because the events have made us speechless, we got to say something. We can't stand the silence. We can't stand nothing being said. And so we begin to chatter. And it seems like that's what Peter is doing here. The text says, not knowing what to say, here's what he says. He says, why don't we make three tabernacles here? One for you, Jesus, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah. So you can see he knew who they were. And bad idea, right? Bad idea in God's eyes. And God, the cloud overshadows them. It says they enter into the cloud. I don't think that necessarily means they're walking into it, but the cloud is coming upon them, surrounding them, coming over them. And God speaks from heaven, and he says, this is my beloved son, hear him. You can almost, it seems like I can almost read between the lines, God is saying, forget Moses, forget Elijah, pay attention to this one. This is my son, hear him. So we see that's not the first time God has spoke from heaven and made that statement, is it? Remember at his baptism that happened. And then the voice ceases, and when it ceases, they're alone. Moses and Elijah are gone, and they're there with Jesus. The bright light is gone. All of this stuff is gone. There's nobody there but Jesus. And they are afraid. They don't just get afraid. They've been afraid ever since the light came upon them. They're fearful. I suspect they are laying on their belly with their face on the ground. Maybe not. But they are fearful. They don't have a clue what to do, what to say. And as they go down the mountain, I suspect that that was a quiet trip. As they walk down, I suspect Jesus is not talking. I suspect they're not either. Their minds are racing with what they have just seen. Jesus tells them, don't tell anyone what you saw until I'm raised from the dead. It does say then, is that Matthew or Mark? In Mark, that they wondered in their mind what this rising from the dead actually meant. We see again evidence that they never understood this. Jesus has told them that he would suffer, that he would be raised the third day. They've never caught on to that, never grasped that. And we see evidence of that there. So let's look at a few things here. First one is what I'm calling the inner circle. There are a few occasions where Jesus picks out from the 12 these three guys and carries them with him a little deeper into events, a little deeper into things that's going on. Peter, James, and John. We saw it a few weeks ago when he raises Jairus' daughter from the dead. He carries Peter, James, and John with him there. in the future, a few weeks or months or whatever the time period is ahead, when Jesus goes to the garden before he's crucified, they all go, but he carries Peter, James, and John a little further into the garden, a little further away from the rest of them, with him to pray. Of course, we know that they promptly fall asleep there as well, I believe. The idea that I see from this, and that I think is a good idea to look for and to practice, is when we are looking and walking with our Christian brothers and sisters, and we are trying to influence someone in their maturity for Christ, to look for those people who have a teachable spirit. Now, I can't tell you that Peter, James, John had a teachable spirit, but I think that they did. But there are some Christians who are eager to know God, more eager comparative than others. And you would be wise, if you want to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, is to give your time to someone who will bear fruit. Now, that doesn't mean that you just write everybody else off. But you've only got so many hours in a day. You've only got so many years in your life, and you need to give it in a way that will profit the kingdom of God. And when someone is there, and God places somebody in your life who wants to grow, then hang out with them. Influence their life. Make time for them. The second thing is what I'm calling the concealment of glory. When Jesus walked on this earth, could you tell the difference between him and the next guy, as far as just seeing them 100 yards away walking down the road? I tend to think probably not. You know, I don't think there was a halo around top of his head as he walked down the street. I think he looked just pretty normal. I think that once you got to know him, it didn't take long to figure out something's unique about this man. What about the normal reaction to Jesus? And there's what I'm talking about there. People may have looked at him as just a normal guy, but they didn't have to be around Jesus long until you realize that there's something unique about him. And there were times when this uniqueness, the people's reaction to it was hatred. It wasn't hatred because Jesus was obnoxious or Jesus was belittling them or Jesus was doing anything wrong. It was hatred because they could not stand the holy presence of God. There was a reaction to Jesus at times because of who he was, in that people recognized there is something godly about this man, that they recognized that he was divine, and they were drawn to him. You remember a study we did, I think it was R.C. Sproul, I forgot what study it was, but he talks about Jesus being other, Jesus being different, Jesus being holy, and that word holy simply means set apart. Jesus is not like me. Jesus is not like you. And the more that we see that, the more reaction we will have to that. That idea is found in this text. We see Jesus suddenly is transfigured before them, and his face shines like the sun. His face glows. His clothing glows. A reflection of God's glory. There are several times which you can see this happening in a small sense to other people in the Bible. And when Jesus was walking the earth, there were things about Jesus and Jesus' deity that were concealed from us. That's why Jesus looked like an ordinary man because God hid his glory. Because we couldn't stand, the people in his day couldn't stand to see even a small dose of God's glory. And so in his humanity, God's glory was concealed. Moses, you remember the account? This is probably the most familiar one. Moses goes to Mount Sinai in Exodus 34. He comes back with the Ten Commandments. But you remember while he was there, and I'm not sure which trip it was, he was talking with God. He wants to see God. God, I want to see you. I want to see your face. You know the account, God, this is my paraphrase. God tells him, no man can see my face and live. But I'm going to cut out this cleft in this rock and put you there. And on the other side of the rock, I'll pass by and let you see my back. And the reflection of God's back, the glory shining from God's back through the rock, when Moses came down the mountain, his face was glowing. And the people were terrified of it. You remember the account that Moses put on a veil over his face to hide the glory of God. And when he went into the tabernacle to speak with God, he would take it off. Or when he talked to the people, he would take it off and put it back on. God's glory. Stephen. This is an interesting passage that I have read before, but it never really registered with me. Acts chapter 6, verse 15, Stephen has been arrested, you might say, and charged with blasphemy. And they couldn't convict him of it, so they find somebody to tell lies. So he's sitting before the council, or probably the Sanhedrin council, and he's sitting there, and they're feeding these lies to the people, to the councilmen, trying to turn everyone against Stephen. Stephen is sitting there, and it says in Acts chapter 6, verse 15, that the council looks at him, and his face is as the face of an angel. Now, typically, I would have read that years ago and thought, well, they look at him, and he's just a soft, nice little guy, you know. He's just gentle and all this. I don't think so. I don't think that's how angels looked. I think angels' eyes were piercing. We see in Revelation the angels' eyes was like a flame of fire. I think what they saw was something they could not unsee. They saw the glory of God reflecting on Stephen's face. Revelation 1:16, John describes the Son of Man, and he describes him as his countenance was like the sun shining in its strength. The women came to the tomb, Jesus' tomb, and they see an angel. This angel is described, his countenance was like lightning, and his clothing as white as snow. Notice it doesn't say his body is like lightning. His countenance. You could define countenance. Some words, you know, once you think about them, they're hard to define. But your countenance has nothing to do with your body. It's something about your appearance that may come from your body, but there's some added dimension to a person's countenance that is not physical. These angels' countenance was like lightning. Transfiguration of Jesus here. We see this described in this way as well. Now I want to spend a little bit of time talking about Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, what do you think they looked like? before the fall. If you want to turn over to Genesis chapter 2, we're going to look at a verse or two. Genesis chapter 2, verse 25. Simple verse, we're all familiar with it. It says, "And they both, Adam and Eve, were both naked, this man and his wife, and were not ashamed." We go into chapter 3, and we see the serpent, and the serpent tempts Eve and Adam, and they fall. Verse 7 says, "After they fall, the eyes of them were both opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings." So here's Adam and Eve. Now, Susan and I have a Bible story book. And I always thought this is a good Bible story book. It's a big, thick book, tells, you know, a lot of the stories of things in the Old Testament, the New Testament. It's got photographs in it or pictures in it. And they're not cartoon figures. They are drawn to look like real people. And you get over in the first part of that book or any other Bible story book similar to that where the pictures are realistic, very realistic. And you get over there to a picture of Adam and Eve before the fall. And you've seen these pictures. What do they look like? Well, Adam is there, and he's standing behind a bush about this tall. Right? He don't have on a shirt. Eve is standing beside him. She's standing behind a taller bush. She's got long, thick hair that drapes down over the front of her shoulders. And you know, by golly, those two people are buck naked. Right? Why do you know that? Because we know they're representing the pre-fall Adam and Eve. And they were naked and were not ashamed. Now, let me ask you something. You ever seen one of those pictures where Adam has gray hair? No. You ever seen one where he's wearing glasses? You ever seen one where his belly was popped out over his waist? No. In other words, you've never seen him in any of those pictures and said, "By golly, that looks like John Waldrop." Right? Never have. You can flip over a few pages, and Adam and Eve have ate of the fruit, and now they're they're fallen creatures, fallen people. Same people, same pictures, but different. Adam don't have the bush in front of him. He's got a loincloth on. Look like Tarzan. Right. Eve standing there, and she's got a dress, usually has one, seems like had one strap over one shoulder and goes down and clothed with that. You ever seen one of those pictures where Adam had gray hair, wore glasses, pot belly? No. In other words, they're still not making him look like me, are they? What are they making him look like? They're making him look like what they think he looked like, right? But here's something you need to grasp. They are giving you a picture of a fallen man. A fallen man. He might be trim and slim. He might be muscular. They might make him as beautiful as they can make him. They might make Eve as beautiful as they can make her. But they cannot get away from showing you a picture of a fallen human being. Now, here's the catch. When they showed you the pictures of the pre-fall Adam and Eve, did they make them look like innocent, pre-fallen human beings? No. They made them look like fallen human beings. Why didn't they make them look like they had no sin nature? Because we don't have a clue what that looks like. Right? All we know is us. And we can have this idea of human beings who are beautiful, who are handsome, or who are just gorgeous, who are perfect specimens of the human race, and yet they are fallen human beings. Have you ever thought of the creation that has fallen? In about a month and a half from now, it's probably going to be the peak of the colors of fall in the trees. And we say that these, when the leaves on the trees, what word do we use? Turn, maybe? Die, maybe? But there's a time toward the end of October, the 1st of November, where the beauty in the foliage is incredibly beautiful. And you are looking at death. Aren't you? You're looking at death and marveling at its beauty. I wonder what that would have looked like before the curse. I suspect it is indescribable. I suspect we don't have a clue what it looked like. Now, winding back around here to Adam and Eve. What did Adam and Eve look like before the fall? I don't know. But I suspect, and this is a guess and it's not unique with me. I used to think I was the only one that ever thought of this until I got to reading people, and it's hundreds of years old, this idea, so I felt a little better about it. But at any rate, that before the fall, Adam and Eve were in the presence of God. And in some way, they were clothed with His glory. In some way, perhaps their face, their countenance, shone like Moses did, or like Stephen's did. Now, I don't mean that they walked around looking like a light bulb, just you couldn't see it, distinguish anything, but somehow, that in a way I cannot imagine, they were clothed with God's glory, but still you knew who they were. You could distinguish one person from another and all this kind of stuff, but they were filled with God's glory. And when they fell, all of a sudden, it's gone. And they were naked and ashamed. I don't know that that's the case, but we see here in the transfiguration of Jesus, God revealing His glory through His Son, Jesus. Our lives will be lived in the absence, for the most part, of that glory. God may show us a glimpse of it occasionally here and there. He just got through showing Peter, James, and John a glimpse of Jesus' glory. I suspect they never recovered. There may be events that have happened in your life. They may have been tragic events or whatever, where you God revealed Himself to you in such a glorious manner. But someday, the day will come when we will get more than a glimpse. We shall see Him as He is. Let's pray.